This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com. Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
In a moment, we're going to hear from Leslie Kane. After two or three years since we last talked with her, and there's a lot of things going on, but I wanted to catch up. But right now, let's consider last week's episode with Jeff Belanger and all those great ghost stories.
Yeah, just fabulous stories. He does, of course, the New England Legends podcast. And just it's a never-ending series of absolutely fascinating stories. I can eat that stuff up like candy. Just love that interview and are looking forward to having Jeff back again in another couple of months.
I was interested in the story where he moves the Robin Hood legend to New England.
Yeah, that was pretty cool as an origin for possibly the more popular Robin Hood stories that we're all familiar with today.
Well, that's why Kevin Costner played Robin Hood with an American accent.
Oh, well. I haven't seen that particular movie. I had planned to go see it, but then every time I seem to do that, it seems to fall through for some reason. So I haven't actually seen that particular version. I used to watch something called Rocket Robin Hood when I was a kid, though, much younger, kind of a cartoon.
I can never get into cartoons that much. I mean, when I was very young, you did the usual Bugs Bunny, Porky Pig stuff, but that's it. Hey, we're going to move now to catching up with someone we haven't talked to in a couple of years, but we want to go back in time. We're going to take Leslie Kane on a journey back about 12 years, and she's got her time machine ready. You have it ready, Leslie, right?
Do my best to set it up.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. And March 23rd, 2008, we had her on. She was involved with the Coalition for Freedom of Information. And Leslie, at that time, you were trying to unearth some NASA UFO documents through a FOIA request, was it?
Yeah, I actually was the plaintiff in a federal lawsuit, a FOIA lawsuit against NASA. And it was to try to get documents about the Keksberg UFO crash case in 1965 that I assume your listeners probably know about
sure.
That case. Yeah. And we had every reason to believe that NASA was on the scene when that event occurred. And they collected documents about every little bit of debris that ever fell from the sky. So they should have had lots of documents. And it was a years and years long effort. And we figured out exactly where they should search. I mean, there's a lot of research that went into it. And I worked with a lawyer and a research firm and this whole team of people, a public relations firm, and it was just this huge thing. But the bottom line is we never ended up getting any documents about the Keksberg case, even though we got hundreds and hundreds of documents about other stuff. So that was very telling in itself, but it was a long effort and didn't yield a lot of results. But the process was really interesting, and I learned a lot from it.
Did you have occasion to talk to Stan Gordon?
Oh, yeah. He was part of our team, but yeah, absolutely. He was really, really involved with us and was very helpful because he knows that case inside out.
That reminds me, we have to get him back on because we always enjoy his appearance. Okay, so that one didn't maybe work out the way you wanted, but the other documents, they give any clues to anything?
They weren't so much about. I'm trying to remember because it was a long time ago. I think we may have gotten some UFO documents that were from the State Department, but none of them were real revelations about UFOs. They were more about meteors and space debris, you know, bits of Russian craft that might have fallen down someplace, or even some unidentified materials that they may have picked up in some location, but it was clearly nothing anomalous about it, you know. But those kinds of records, but the interesting thing was there were so many records on meteors, and that those included media stories. And when the Keksberg object came down, it was basically said in the media and by a lot of people that it was a meteor. That's sort of what the line was at the time. And there were lots of media stories about that all over the country. And the interesting thing was there was not one of those showed up in the files from NASA, which made no sense because they had new media stories about meteors that came down just before Keksberg and just after Keksberg. So we came to the conclusion that obviously all the files related to that case were sequestered away in some location that we didn't access. Either we didn't go to the right places with our request, or the documents were just at such a high level of classification that they didn't even acknowledge they existed. And we will never know the answer to that, but it was revealing to us that there was absolutely nothing, even about it being a meteor that came down.
Right. The absence of evidence is telling in and of itself.
Exactly. And that's, the federal judge was fantastic that we had. I think it was Judge Kennedy. He was a very well-known judge in Washington. He was extremely critical of the way NASA handled our inquiries. And, they weren't responsive to requests and they weren't following the law. And so that in itself was very satisfying to kind of have a UFO case litigated by a very well-known judge and be able to sit in the courtroom and listen to him admonish NASA for their behavior. It was all worth it just for that.
I can imagine. Now, after you engaged in that effort, where did you take the organization? And I want to move through the years to the time that you were working on the UFO data project and where that went. So did you continue to work with this organization to get more documents from different places?
No, we didn't do any more FOIA. I mean, we really had it with FOIA requests after this one. I think what happened next was I kind of moved into being focused on working on a book. And gradually the organization kind of disbanded. I mean, we didn't, it was just basically an all-volunteer group of individuals who come together for this period of time to do this work. And then I kind of moved on to my book and everybody else moved on to their various projects. And so it just sort of, we didn't have any kind of official disbanding, but it just sort of faded into the background, basically, is what happened. And then I started focusing on researching my book that came out in 2010, which was only 2 years after that. So I might have even started that by when we did that interview. I just don't remember.
That book, I think, was one of the first big UFO-related books in many years. How did you get someone like a John Podesta to write an introduction?
Well, it's interesting you brought up about the NASA lawsuit and the coalition, because the reason I got to know John Podesta was because he was a supporter of our NASA lawsuit. And we did two press conferences in Washington concerning that lawsuit, and he spoke at both of them. And the connection came because his brother's public relations firm in Washington was hired by the Sci-Fi Channel, who was bankrolling this whole effort, to kind of represent us and do work for us with the media in Washington. And so because his brother was working in that way with us, he brought John into it, and John was always very interested in both UFOs and in the people's right to information. He was a real advocate for the release of government information to the public. And so he was willing to come on board and kind of be a public voice of support for us, and brought a lot of legitimacy to what we were doing. And I used to go down to Washington and meet with him over the course of the investigation and with the lawsuit, and share with him what was going on. And in those meetings, I also had an opportunity to share other things with him that I thought were important that he should know about UFOs and about what other governments were doing, because I was very much a proponent of trying to get our government more involved and trying to get a government agency set up like I had experienced and visited in other countries. So John was interested in that as well. So that's how we sort of developed this relationship. And then when I was doing my book and I got a really good publisher and a great editor, and it was, I asked him, I just basically asked him if he'd write the foreword, and he said he would.
Let's break here. We got Leslie Kane investigative journalist. And, of course, you've probably heard about those pieces she co-wrote for the New York Times. And we're going back through her rather fascinating history in the UFO field with Jean and Randall. You're in
The Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Message and data rates may apply. Individual results vary. Exclusions apply.
Contacts and glasses are such a hassle. I'd love to finally get LASIK, but...
I'm going
to
stop you right there. If you want LASIK, then the LASIK Vision Institute has officially taken away everything standing in your way.
Isn't LASIK expensive?
Not at the LASIK Vision Institute. We're offering dramatically low prices and an absolutely free consultation. See for free if LASIK is right for you by texting DO88 to 350350.
But I'm really busy.
A text only takes seconds, and the LASIK procedure typically only takes 15 minutes. And best of all, most patients can get back to work the following day.
I had no idea.
The LASIK Vision Institute uses the latest FDA-approved LASIK technology that helps the majority of patients achieve 20/20 vision. We've performed over 1.3 million procedures. That's experience you can trust. And we're offering 20% off our already low-cost services.
What's that text again?
Text DO88 to 350350. That's DO88 to 350350 to schedule your free consultation today.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens. We support the amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Jeunesse products are designed by leading doctors in their field with natural ingredients and even stem cell technology. These products help your body perform and look better. Shop Jeunesse at GCNLife.com or call 1-844-443-6637. GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
If you owe money to the IRS, you need to hear this. The IRS is cracking down on those who owe back taxes. It starts with a devastating letter, and if you don't act immediately, you could find yourself having your wages garnished or have a lien placed on your property. But there's a solution. Tax 10,000 can help. Avoid enforced compliance, where these holds on your income and seizure of your home could become a nightmare that just won't end. Call 800-239-9957 now and speak to one of our experts. 800-239-9957 is the number to link you directly to a tax resolution specialist who will negotiate with the IRS on your behalf. Working through the IRS Fresh Start program, all the forms will be handled for you. All you have to do is make the toll-free call. 800-239-9957. Find out if you qualify and possibly save yourself thousands of dollars, not to mention a lot of headaches. It could be the best call you've made today. That number again, 800-239-9957. The service does not provide tax settlement or legal services. We will refer you to a company that does provide such services. Often the IRS will not agree to any reduction in the amount owed. Not all taxpayers who owe more than $10,000 will qualify for a tax reduction program.
This is how we do every day.
If you love them enough to turn off your music and pretend like their music is your music.
Ah, this is mommy's jam.
Then surely you'll check NHTSA.gov/the right seat to make sure they're in the right car seat.
Let's play it again.
Check today at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So Leslie Kane is telling us about the writing of the book and how she got to meet John Podesta and how he came to write an intro. It's interesting, too, that even though we knew that Podesta was interested in UFOs, I don't recall him ever being ridiculed for it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think I recall that either. I mean, maybe he was by members of the Republican Party if they had some political beef with him or something. There might have been some quips. But I don't remember it being a big problem for him, actually. And he would even put out tweets occasionally about UFOs. But just since we were talking about my book, I just want to mention, in case people aren't aware of it, that the title of the book is UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record, just for those who aren't familiar with the book.
Right. And we're coming up to the 10th anniversary of that book now already, which is amazing. I've got a copy of it, of course, an excellent book for sure.
Yeah, it's hard to believe it's been 10 years, but yeah, that's
true. Yeah, really, because when that book first came out, and I remember the interviews that you were doing, and you did quite a number of them, it was a very successful book, you were saying that you had just almost by accident got into the field of ufology as a journalist, became curious about it back then. And so back then you were kind of new to it all. Now it's been 10 years. And so this is really going to be a fascinating interview because you're no longer just someone who's just kind of gotten into it and learning about it. You've been in it for a while and have some experience now.
Yeah, I mean, I would say when my book came out in 2010, I wasn't exactly new to it. I've been researching it for more than 10 years. And that's how I was able to get generals and pilots and government officials to actually come on board with my book. So I think I was fairly experienced at that time. But yeah, another 10 years adds a lot.
Right. Of course, when you add it all up, that's quite a long time now.
Yeah, it's been about 20 years. Well, 20 years since I published my first article in the Boston Globe, which was in May of 2000. So this May, it'll be, you know, 20 years from that.
Continuing with that, just very briefly here, you had mentioned, of course, John Podesta and whether any criticisms may have come from Republican sources. I recall you being on Fox News, I think with Bill Hemmer at one time.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on Fox a lot, and Tucker Carlson nowadays is a real, real advocate for this issue. I mean, he covers it on mainstream television more than anyone else.
It's funny, too, that we all recognize Tucker Carlson as a conservative firebrand, and he's a bomb thrower in that sense. He gets into heated debates with people with whom he disagrees. But when he has you and Nick Pope and other people on that show to talk about UFOs, he is straight ahead and serious.
Absolutely right. And he's really on fire about this issue. I mean, he has said that he would cover it more if he could. He really gets it. He's outraged, you know, and he's willing to express that outrage that our government isn't taking it more seriously, that people aren't more informed about it. And you just never know. And it really, the issue clearly transcends politics or political parties or anything like that, you know. So I think that's why there isn't a lot of bickering and ridicule going from one party to another. It's just you get people in both parties interested in this. And they realize it has nothing to do with your political framework.
Now, in the 2016 campaign, Hillary Clinton, on some of her appearances, mentioned an interest in looking into UFOs. She referred to them, of course, as UAPs, and mentioned that the name had changed, and she described that very knowledgeably. I assume Podesta is the one who got her involved in that.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly influenced her, I would assume. You know, I can't say for sure, but, you know, certainly during her husband's presidency, he was interested in it also. And she was exposed to Lawrence Rockefeller back then when that whole thing was going on. So I think she's bumped up against this issue for a long time. And I don't know at what level her personal interest, how far that goes, but she's obviously someone who takes it seriously. And I'm sure John has had an influence on her.
What is very interesting here is I looked at that appearance. I saw a couple of them on late night TV. And I wondered, what is Donald Trump going to say about this? He's going to have some kind of tweet about crazy, crooked Hillary. You know what? He never said anything.
No.
I don't recall one tweet from Donald Trump about Hillary Clinton and UFOs. I would think he would go into the tinfoil hat and everything. He'd get wacky over it.
Yeah, I guess he just picked other things to criticize her about. I don't know. Or he was busy doing something else that night when she was on, you know? I have no idea, but he doesn't seem particularly interested in the topic of UFOs. I think he was asked about it once, and his answer was that he just wasn't, I was sort of very noncommittal and uninterested, and didn't seem to take it that seriously, as far as I can remember.
Yes, he blew it off.
Yeah, sort of blew it off, right. Exactly. So that's the way it is.
I think I first ran across you back around just before that your book came out, when you were given a credit in a documentary called I Know What I Saw, and a special thanks in another one called Out of the Blue.
Mm-hmm. Both by James Fox.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was, I remember Out of the Blue went way back.
Yes.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with those then? That this is going to take us back to some of the time before your book actually came out. And when you were just saying before the last break that you had been interested in it for some time. So maybe we should go right back to the beginning and talk about that and how you became involved with James Fox and these documentaries as well, because there's still good documentaries to this day.
Oh, yeah, and there's going to be an even better one coming out that James Fox is working on now. It's almost done. As you guys probably know that.
Sure.
Yeah.
How did you meet up with James Fox?
Well, I met James because I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area at the time that my Boston Globe story came out, which was in the spring of 2000. And James also lived in the Bay Area, and I had another colleague named Tim Coleman, who was working with James on Out of the Blue, lived in the Bay Area. And I think I knew Tim Coleman. He was a fellow journalist who used to work for BBC, and he was interested in UFOs. I may have met him at a conference, or somehow I got together and got to know him, and through him I met James Fox. And they just wanted to do it. They did a little interview with me for Out of the Blue because they wanted to have a journalist say something about UFOs. And at that point, I may have done a second story. I did a series of stories beginning with the Boston Globe, and I don't remember if for that first movie I had done anything else besides the Boston Globe or not. But it was definitely pretty early on. And then for Out of the Blue, I was actually sort of a producer on that show. That was around because, for I Know What I Saw, which was James's second film. And we co-produced a press conference, James and I, in Washington, D.C. in 2007, which you guys probably remember. And we brought a lot of fascinating people over to Washington and gave this press conference with them.
We will continue with Leslie King. And we're going back to her connection with James Fox, who's been on the PowerCast several times, and his documentaries. More to come with Gene and Randall. You're in
the PowerCast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
U.S.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
President Trump's lawyers had their first chance to defend the president after 3 days of the Democrats' opening arguments. President Trump's attorney gave a two-hour preview of what is expected to be a vigorous defense. White House counsel Pat Cipollone said, "We don't believe they've come anywhere close to meeting the burden for proof on what they're asking you to do." Attorneys continue to use the defense that the Democrats are trying to overturn the 2016 elections. The defense will continue their arguments on Monday. The question of whether witnesses will be called has not yet been answered. A 5.0 magnitude earthquake hit southern Puerto Rico, raising concerns about an unstable infrastructure in a region that is hit by quakes every day for nearly a month. The newest quake comes a day after hundreds of people were evacuated from the earthquake shelters that flooded after heavy rains hit the U.S. territory. This is USA Radio News.
Got an old car? You can donate it, whether it's running or not, to the United Breast Cancer Foundation and save a life. They'll even come and pick it up for free. The United Breast Cancer Foundation has saved hundreds of women's lives through their free or low-cost breast screen exams. But now they need your help. The United Breast Cancer Foundation wants to save more lives through early detection by offering women free or low-cost breast screening exams. And donating your old car, SUV, or truck, whether it's running or not, helps pay for them. Plus, you get a charitable tax deduction. Help the United Breast Cancer Foundation save lives by donating your old car, SUV, or truck. Call now for free pickup. 800-280-2144. 800-280-2144. 800-280-2144. Call right now. That number again is 800-280-2144.
Bags under the eyes, crow's feet, fine lines and wrinkles are things adults complain about as they age. Now there's Instantly Ageless. It works in minutes and is great for men and women. Here's a clip from the Rachel Ray Show testing the results of Instantly Ageless.
Board certified dermatologist Dr. Whitney Bowe.
If you're looking to try to trim back the cloth on a budget, you know, in the privacy of your own home, but actually there's some recent technologies emerging, almost like changes the behavior of the skin while it sits on the skin.
She went off to try a product called Instantly Ageless.
Yeah.
Instantly, you could see a difference. Even the cameraman were like, wow, look at the difference.
Yeah.
And but I would definitely use this product.
This product, within minutes of applying it, it was actually a very dramatic rejuvenation.
Try Instantly Ageless today at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com. 30-day money-back guarantee and preferred price discount at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com.
Hi, this is Joshua P. Warren, author of The Poor Man's Paranormal, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So Leslie Kane, talking about James Fox and her involvement with his documentaries, and of course he's got this other one that's taken a lot of years to develop. He's gone through a lot to get this project moving.
Indeed he has. The second film, just to briefly say that I worked with him on the press conference in 2007, and that film was being made right around that same time involving a lot of the people that we had at the press conference. So I was just assisting him with that film. I went on some shoots with him. I went on to Paris and was able to meet Dennis Leti for the first time. And so I sort of helped him out with that film a bit. And the new one is, I think, at a whole new level. I mean, I've seen parts of it. I've shared, you know, James consults with me and I've given him feedback on some of it. And I think it's going to be really, really good, this new one. So that's exciting.
When is it coming out?
As far as I know, it's definitely coming out in 2020. I remember being told June, and now I think it might be fall of 2020. I'm just not exactly sure.
What's it called?
I think it's called The Phenomenon. And his trailer, he told me about 2 weeks ago that his trailer was coming out in a week. So now that trailer is going to come out.
How interesting. And here we're hearing about it first.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful.
Now, is this film going to be a theatrical release or go to a streaming service like Netflix?
As I understand it, he's going to have a theatrical release initially, and then it's going to go into a streaming service or a television network or something. He's going to do both, and he's got a great team of people handling the distribution and all that level of it. It's very, very professionally done, the whole thing. Just at another level from the other two films he made, without question.
This takes us to, of course, the way UFOs are received. And you have to have seen this, of course, because of your involvement, from 2000 to 2020. These days, you say you're interested in UFOs or UAPs, people don't necessarily look at you sideways anymore. It's a lot better, a lot different. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, I was just reflecting the other day with a filmmaker about, well, if I think back to when I first started reporting on this topic in 2000, compared to what it's like to report on it today, it's a world of difference. And not just for my own reporting, but for what I see around me in the media, in terms of how the media relates to this topic. And therefore, that affects people. That affects the world out there. And I think the New York Times stories in particular have really upped it a lot because of the impact that those stories have had and the credibility they bring to it. So many people have told me that everybody, you know, so many people read those articles, and so many people has different views about the topic as a result of them. So I do think things have changed a lot.
And I think you've contributed to that over the years. You've really helped to bring about an acceptance of the subject matter. But where in this history of it would you say that you cracked through the ice, or that the subject matter in general finally cracked through the ice?
Well, I think there were a bunch of cracks for me personally. I mean, my first crack was the Boston Globe story, which was a lengthy, serious story that I was able to get in a major newspaper, and that was kind of a new thing. And I remember people saying, no journalist has ever done anything like this before. So that was a big breakthrough for me to just get rolling. And then my book was an icebreaker too, because it was covered on, you know, a lot of major television network. I think it brought more credibility to the topic. And then I would say the next big one was the New York Times stories, both of them. The first one in December of 2017, and then the second one in May of 2019. The one in May of 2019, I mean, this is amazing to me. So the New York Times puts out a list at the end of every year of the 100 most read stories of the previous year. And in that list for 2019 of the 100 most read stories, our story on the Roosevelt UFO incident was the number 10, the 10 most read story of all the stories in the New York Times for the whole year. And I think that shows, you know, the level of impact and the level of interest that people have for this topic. I mean, number 10 in the New York Times for the year is really astonishing.
That is amazing, especially considering all these political stories happening at the same time. You know, the Trump stories of the day, all 17 of them, and where this gets in there, competing for space. But before we go more into how you got involved with those stories, you were involved with Mark Roediger talking about this UFO data project to set up a network of UFO detectors. And we had you on, I think, in 2015.
Yeah, that project, it really never, I mean, I should let Mark speak to it. And actually, Mark and I have a call scheduled on Friday. We're going to catch up on a lot of things, but that's tomorrow. But the project, it never was able to acquire the funding it needed to get off the ground, unfortunately. The website is still there, and Mark and a professor named Alex Wendt from the University of Ohio were the major players behind that organization. You know, I'm going to find out more tomorrow. It just so happens, but I don't think that they've been able to accomplish very much, and I just haven't been very actively involved with that, although I keep in touch with some of the people who were involved with it. But yeah, I think it was a good idea, and I wish more had happened with it. But, you know, not everything comes to fruition. That one is still kind of laying low, I think.
I wanted to mention, of course, in connection with that, it seems there have been a couple of other projects that we've talked about on the show, setting up paranormal UFO collection, data collection systems, and they never seem to finish up. There's always something. Our former co-host, Chris O'Brien, was involved in the San Luis Valley camera project, and I guess they've done tests, but I've heard very little or nothing about it. And I know the last year or two that we talked with him, he seemed to be just a step away. And then we had an organization from Canada putting up a detector, UFO detector, as part of a low orbit system. I never heard much about that either. Isn't that interesting that none of these projects ever gets to the next step?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of them where the intentions are really great and the people that come together are really great. I think a lot of the bottom line for some of these projects is finances. I mean, you've got to have a funding base to be able to do work. And it's very hard to get that. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, good ideas are a dime a dozen, but getting people to step up to the plate, that's another story.
And people are volunteering their time, and everybody has lives and jobs and families, and it's just, you know, it's not always easy. But some of them, so that's, I think it just, that's why it happens a lot, that things don't go where you want them to go.
It's kind of sad, Leslie, that we have these billionaires, Warren Buffett, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, et cetera, worth tens of billions of dollars. They got all that money. And just think what a small part, maybe $1 billion, which is chump change to them. It's like me giving you a quarter in terms of its impact. Mm-hmm. They could do wonders.
It's true. It would be great, wouldn't it?
Is there a way to
read? We had to that was Lawrence Rockefeller back when he was alive. He used to. I mean, it wasn't anything close to $1 billion, but at least he was supporting UFO work and investigations and stuff, which was made a big difference.
Who does it today? I guess Bob Bigelow. But, of course, he keeps everything close to the vest. We never know what he's doing. And that leads us, of course, to this other story, how the New York Times articles came to be. And we learned about a UFO project at the Pentagon, and the former Senator Harry Reid's connection with that. So that is another story in itself, and I'd like you to tell us where you started hearing about that one, because that one, the impact is still being felt. In fact, we had a couple of weeks ago Gary Voorhees, who was one of the people who saw the Tic Tac UFO. He was aboard another ship, I believe, at the time. Leslie Kane, investigative journalist, joins us. Gene, he's Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
The Hebo Tea Club's original pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. So it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, the Hebo Tea Club's original pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The Hebo Tea Club's original pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at ShopSuperTea.com or call 818-984-6100. That's ShopSuperTea.com, 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. For your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So out of the blue, when one day I read the New York Times digitally, I see this piece and I look at the authors and I see your name on that list, and I thought then, where did this begin? What's the genesis of it?
Well, I'd be happy to tell you about that. And actually, the story of how it all came to be was written up in the Times. That story in itself was written up in the Times on December 19th, 2 days after the story broke, for those who might want to look that up. But what happened was that when Luis Elizondo resigned from his position as the head of the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program at the DOD, which we all call ATIP, and I'm going to take the story from there, but can I assume that your readers know Elizondo, that has he been on your show, or have you had anything about him on your show?
We've mentioned him. Of course, we mentioned a certain controversy not worth going into. We've mentioned him. He's not been on the show. I've written to him a couple of times. He hasn't done yet. But I think because we have so many listeners of different levels of understanding, give us a brief background of that.
Okay. Well, I mean, the way it worked for me, because I hadn't heard of him until that day. So I was invited to a meeting invited to come down to Washington. By some close colleagues of mine who also happened to be in connection with this Defense Department program, who were associates with that program, and knew the head of the program. And I was told that he was resigning, and they wanted me to meet him. And his name was Luis Elizondo. And I went to this meeting in Washington in a hotel in D.C., and spent maybe 3 hours, I'd say, approximately, with Elizondo, and Hal Putoff was there, Chris Mellon, and Jim Semivan. I think that's public knowledge by now that they were at that meeting. And I met him, and I was shown this absolutely astonishing information that to me was astonishing regarding the fact that the program even existed at all, which nobody knew about publicly. Nobody knew about there was a Defense Department program studying UFOs. And here I was sitting opposite the director of that program who had been involved, you know, had been running it for 10 years. And so a lot of it was just talking to him. And I was shown a lot of documents that showed me that, you know, that what he was saying was true. And I was shown the letter that Harry Reid, a statement he wrote requesting that this program, you know, go into a special access status. I believe that letter has since been released by George Knapp. And I was shown other documents and these three videos that have since been released that were Defense Department videos, which have been cleared for public release. But most importantly, I mean, the videos were astonishing, but what, you know, most important was that there was this government program, and Mr. Elizondo had resigned. He'd written this absolutely stunning letter to Secretary Mattis, the Secretary of Defense. And his letter to Mattis I found to be very powerful because of the references he made in that to his frustration with the fact that not enough resources were being provided to the work of investigating UFOs and how it was a national security issue and it needs to be taken seriously. And he was just expressing all of that here to the Secretary of Defense. And I was able to read that letter, and it was extremely powerful. And I think it has since been released, possibly by George Knapp. I'm not sure, but we at the New York Times, we kept all of our documents confidential as at the request of various sources that we do that. So, but it had a huge impact on me, and I really recognized that this was at the level of a possible story for the New York Times, and that's how a whole started. I then went to my colleague Ralph Blumenthal, who worked at the Times for decades and is now a freelancer with the Times, and together we had a meeting with a high level person from the Washington Bureau. And that's how the article was greenlit, and we were assigned Helene Cooper to work with us, who was the Pentagon correspondent for the New York Times, an incredible journalist, prize-winning, just brilliant, well-connected person, and it was a real gift for us to be able to work with her, and that's how it all happened.
First-class treatment.
Yeah, we had a big story, and I think the head of the Bureau, who I also met with in Washington, Elizabeth Buemiller, she realized that. And she was our editor for the story. So we had an incredibly powerful team of people. I mean, Helene Cooper, you know, was their Pentagon person, so she knew people at the Pentagon, and she could get access to lots of things that Ralph and I were not set up to get access for, or would have been harder for us to get certain people to talk to us. And, you know, but Helene had that kind of connection to people. So it was absolutely fantastic. The three of us each had our own roles to play, and we just worked really well as a team. It was a great experience to do that.
Now, to go back how this started, I never even had a inkling that someone like former Senator Harry Reid, when he was the Senate Majority Leader, would have any interest in the subject and any interest in trying to get funding for a project like this.
I had no idea either, Gene. I mean, this was everything I learned at that meeting was news to me. And I don't think anybody knew that program was kept under wraps. The funding was kept under wraps, the whole thing. And so nobody knew about it. And that's why the story was so explosive. Because, you know, we were putting this information out there for the first time. So, yeah, I didn't know that Harry Reid was involved. And there were two other senators that were involved with him. But he was the main person. And since then, he has done, I mean, we did an interview. Our Helene Cooper actually flew to Las Vegas to interview him. But since then, he's done other interviews and has spoken out a lot about this topic. So he's been an incredible, important voice for all of this.
as has Luis Elizondo, who you were saying you actually met with. And I have a question about that, because there's been some actual questioning about whether or not he actually led the program itself, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, because there's been so many headlines that he ran it, he was the head of it, he was the person who was in charge, and yet nobody has been able to come up with any documentation for that that we've seen out here. When you were looking through all of these documents in this private session, were you able to determine with reasonable certainty that he was the head of that program?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have doubted it. In terms of what I was shown a lot of correspondence and emails, and there were other sources that I had that confirmed it for me. It wasn't just the documents. And, you know, whether you want to say he was director or head of it or even a point person, I mean, it's a matter of semantics, what word you're going to use. The program was not, you know, it was a fairly small kind of collection of people. And it wasn't like it had its own office and its own stationery or logos or any of the stuff that you would expect a program to normally have. It was a devoted group of people who wanted to pursue and study this topic, and they were able to get funding for a while to do so. And Lou was the person Lou Elizondo, that kind of coordinated everything, made it happen. He was the point person. You can call him a director, whatever you want. I think, you know.
So he sounds like he was in a more of a coordinator position.
You'd have to ask him. I mean, my sense of it, we stand by what we wrote in our initial story in the Times, which was that he was in the role of the director for this program. If you want to, you know, and he was comfortable with that word, and so were others who I spoke to who were involved with the program and had worked with it for years.
I think we can move past that, though,
yes,
because this is not part of what Leslie's looking into here, and that gets involved in the UFO field and some of the back and forth that goes on, and I don't think it's anything that she could deal with because she didn't focus on that. She focused on the information. Now, was it $22 million that they got funding?
Correct, yeah. Initially, they got $22 million, and a lot of that was spent on hiring independent contractors to do various kinds of studies. And they got, I don't know, 34 or something like that, papers written and studies done on materials and the effects on human beings of close encounters and a lot of stuff, which, of course, you know, most of it has not been able to be released. And Bob Bigelow was his organization was received the funding. And then what he did was he hired out all these independent contractors. He actually was not that involved with it himself.
Let's break it there and we'll go on to the involvement. Okay. We've got more to come with Leslie, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Classic science fiction at its best. Available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in this free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call them toll-free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.